Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's Authoritarian Playbook Series. Today we are speaking with two librarians who have been fighting Republican-backed book bans across the country and standing up for the right to read. There have been nearly 23,000 book bans in public schools nationwide since 2021, according to PEN America. It's important to note that parents are not the main drivers of these book bans. According to a 2024 Knight Foundation survey, two-thirds of Americans oppose efforts to restrict books in public schools, and nearly 9 in 10 public school parents say they are confident in their local public schools selecting appropriate books for their students to read. So today we will talk about the organized groups like Moms for Liberty that are behind these book bans. Despite all of that, PEN America writes in a recent report, quote, "Book censorship in the United States is rampant and common. Never before in the life of any living American have so many books been systematically removed from school libraries across the country. Never before have so many states passed laws or regulations to facilitate the banning of books, including bans on specific titles statewide. Never before have so many politicians sought to bully school leaders into censoring according to their ideological preferences, even threatening public funding to exact compliance. Never before has access to so many stories been stolen from so many children," end quote. Amid this surge of attacks on intellectual freedom, a new documentary is shining a light on the group on the front lines of this fight, librarians. The film, The Librarians, follows librarians in Texas, Florida, New Jersey, and beyond as they confront these sweeping book bans, facing personal attacks and threats for refusing to censor their libraries, and find themselves thrust into the national spotlight for fighting back against authoritarianism and standing up for the right to read. Here is a trailer for the documentary, The Librarians.
I'm doing a criminal investigation into some of your staff. Essentially, the librarians are my suspects.
Have you a real love of people, books, and learning? You may well consider the vocation of a librarian.
It didn't dawn on us that we would come under attack.
The word I have on my heart is repentance. We have librarians who are misunderstanding what is healthy and good for children.
When I was first attacked, student's mother was calling me a pornographer, pedophile, and groomer of children.
This, do not interrupt my time.
That was my office. These are two books that I was asked to be removed, and I would not remove them.
We're gonna pull books off the shelves.
Stamp, color purple.
Yep, there's your nudity right there.
Get rid of them. Get rid of them.
This book was banned.
I would like to know how the history of the KKK is pornographic.
We have a movement within America that has decided that school boards are now where they want to push their agenda.
This stuff is coming into your schools, and it's probably already there.
Part of the ethics of our profession to support the First Amendment and fight censorship.
I've had former students reach out to me that have told me books have saved them. I'm going to speak out about it.
This is not a communist nation. You do not get to pick our reading material. It is ours.
You're trying to arrest librarians.
I do not. Yeah,
you're a fascist. You're a fascist.
I cannot imagine my face on the wanted poster and my friends being taken away in handcuffs.
You're coming for teachers and librarians, and they know it.
This is a spiritual war.
Our goal is to spread this into other communities.
This is about taking away rights.
I'm here today to implore you to listen to librarians.
What is going on?
This can't be America. No, this can't be America.
That is the trailer for the new documentary, The Librarians. The film will premiere on PBS on Monday, February 9th. If you're in Northern California, it will screen at the Rialto in Sebastopol tomorrow night at 6:30 and the Rialto in Berkeley tomorrow night at 6 p.m., which will feature a panel discussion with Oakland school library leaders. Additional screenings in Berkeley will be at 10 a.m. on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. You can find more information at thelibrariansfilm.com. Today, we're joined by two of the librarians featured in the documentary who have been leading the fight for the right to read, Martha Hixon and Becky Calzada. Martha Hixon recently retired after 20 years as a high school librarian in New Jersey. Her fight for the right to read has been recognized with many, many awards. In 2022, Martha was the recipient of the National Coalition Against Censorship's Judith Krug Outstanding Librarian Award and the American Library Association's Lemony Snicket Prize for Noble Librarians Faced with Adversity in recognition of her energy and bravery in the face of persistent and ongoing hostility while advocating for students' First Amendment right to read. Martha Hixon has faced attacks online from groups that oppose books, focusing mostly on LGBTQ plus content. Hi, Martha. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Becky Calzada is a district library coordinator in Leander, Texas, and co-founding member of Texas Freedom Fighters, a grassroots-led group of librarians launched in October 2021 to support intellectual freedom and highlight the positive work of school librarians. Becky Calzada is a member of the American Library Association's Policy Corps and has received several intellectual freedom awards for her advocacy against book bans. Becky is the 2024-25 American Association of School Librarians president and co-author of Prepared Libraries, Empowered Teams, a workbook for navigating intellectual freedom challenges together, which was published by ALA in June 2024. Hi, Becky. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rose.
Well, I want to start off first by thanking you both for your work. I'm guessing that all of our listeners have an incredible story to share about how they've been affected by libraries. And honestly, I think I can say that I am where I am today doing this job because of libraries. I'll never forget the day that I walked into my college library and so many newspapers were hanging from that wooden bar. And it was newspaper after newspaper. And I spent so much time reading newspapers. It just opened my world to so many amazing things. And so I want to start off by asking you both, why did you and how did you become a librarian? And what do you love about it? Or in your case, Martha, since you're recently retired, what did you love about it? If you can share that story with us, we'd love to hear about your background.
Sure. I didn't start out to become a librarian. I got a bachelor's degree in English. And my thought at that time when I graduated was that I wanted to teach at some point. I didn't go straight into teaching. My plan was to go back and get an advanced degree and then start teaching. And I worked in a variety of different occupations, but they all involved writing in some form or fashion. And eventually that led me to a career in corporate public relations for AT&T. But after the events of September 11th, I took stock of my life and realized that although I enjoyed the very nice paycheck that came with a corporate career, my soul was dying. So I went back to where my soul originally led me, and that was to work with young people. And I had a friend who, I'm going to see in 2 weeks in Toronto, who had gone to library school a few years before. And the whole time she was there, my friend Carol kept saying, "You would love this." So I decided to follow up on that little clue that the universe gave me. And I went to library school, and my friend Carol was right. I did love it. And what I loved the most is the space of the library and the people who inhabit it. In a school library, we are kind of a safe zone for every student in the school. We all remember high school. We all remember that there were the popular kids, the cheerleaders and the jocks. And then there was, you know, there's a whole strata of students. And there are some who aren't necessarily at the top of the heap. And those are the kids who really found a place in my heart because they found a safe space in the library. And they would come every day. And it was just a place to hang out, be quiet, and most importantly, be themselves. Mm-hmm. And because those kids were being themselves, one of the great parts about working as a school librarian, I never had a job where I laughed so much. They love to talk to you. They love to joke with you. And it's just a terrific job.
Wow, that's an amazing story. One of the things that's so moving about the film, The Librarians, is the way in which so many librarians like you, Martha, talk about the power of books to change or save children's lives. Without mentioning the names of the kids, of course, can you share a couple of stories that stand out for you?
Sure. I can remember very vividly a day when there was a student who was new at school. And she was coming in as a junior, which is tough for anybody to change schools mid-high school. And she was kind of socially awkward, very, very shy. And she was coming into the library every day. And finally she came and she said to me, "Do you have any books about different genders?" And I said, "Sure." And so I took her over to the shelf to show her where books on gender of all sorts were, and left her there to browse at her leisure. And she came back with several books about transgender people. And she said to me, "Do you believe that there can be such a thing as transgender people? Can people be more than one gender?" And I said, "You know, I'm not a scientist, but I am a person who's lived on this planet for decades. And I believe that it's a spectrum, you know, that people, and maybe at different times in their lives, people fall into different areas in terms of their gender identity." And that was the extent of our conversation. Well, long story short, this student came to identify herself as part of the LGBTQ plus community. And she eventually joined our school LGBTQ plus organization, and she found her community. Mm. So from that small interaction in the library, this student went from being very lonely, very much an outsider, very shy and awkward, to through the power of books and the power of the library, finding her own space within the school.
Mm. What an incredible story. Thank you for sharing that one. That's Martha Hickson, who recently retired after 20 years as a high school librarian in New Jersey. Martha is featured in the new documentary, The Librarians, which will premiere on PBS on Monday, February 9th. You can find screening information at thelibrariansfilm.com. And if you'd like to talk about any memories of libraries or what they mean to you, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. If you are a librarian or an educator and you'd like to talk about a story that stands out for you, what this work means to you, and then, of course, we'll talk about the fight against book bans and the fight for the right to read. We're also joined by Becky Calzada, a district library coordinator in Leander, Texas, co-founding member of Texas Freedom Fighters. This is a grassroots-led group of librarians that highlight the positive work of school librarians across the country. They also support intellectual freedom. What about your background, Becky? How did you become a librarian, and what do you love about this work?
So I grew up in deep South Texas in a little small border town called Mercedes. And my parents, who eventually became citizens of the United States, only had up to an eighth grade education. And so it was really important for my mother that we, you know, go to school, that we learn and that sort of thing. And one of the activities we did as a family is go to the library. So our public library in Mercedes, and we went weekly. We didn't have a lot of books in our home because, you know, we're living kind of humbly. But what I can say about those books is that they just opened up the world to me in terms of, you know, learning about what's happening beyond South Texas. And of course, this was, you know, in the 70s and all. I did go on to become a public school teacher and didn't really understand the pathway to becoming a librarian until in my eighth year of teaching. a school librarian said to me, have you thought about becoming a school librarian? I feel like you have all the qualities. And I mean, because I am still an avid reader and was at the time and loved teaching those same or sharing stories with first graders at the time. And so that's what I decided to do. So I went to library school. And what I loved about it was that it not only allowed me to offer, you know, reading materials to readers, it just opened me up to even to just being in a bigger classroom. You know, the school library is the largest classroom in an entire school. It's the heart of a school. And you see every teacher, you see every student, you work with all families. And I love the opportunity to be able to build relationships with readers by finding just the right book for them, helping them to select the books they wanted to read, working with parents and programming and that sort of thing too. And in my role now, I get to actually work with over 40 different campus libraries, and of course, and their librarians. And then in my role in terms of like a leader, like for ASL and all, I get to just meet with so many people across the country now. And so for me, it's always been about building that love of literacy, leveraging the library space in terms of building access opportunities. Because what we know is that the library can be a space to offer programming for everyone. It could be whether it's an author visit or maybe it's even teaching students how to use a 3D printer, having a 3D printer in a space that everyone can use versus just being in a class. And so for me, libraries represent spaces of opportunity, learning about your world, being creative, but then also being just that quiet space if you want to have a spot to yourself and feel like you belong.
And Becky, since you have met so many school librarians across the country, what would you like to share about the important work they do and how they're responding to this political environment?
So, you know, one of the things that so librarians always come from a place of being a servant leader on a campus. You know, like I said earlier, we serve all students. We serve our teachers. We partner with our principals in terms of like trying to expand, you know, the goals for the school through the lens of the library. What we don't know though, since 2021 is we've had the work of librarians, the credentials of librarians misrepresented, you know, lies told about their intentions. And what I know is that, you know, librarians have many certifications in terms of like lots of schooling in the area of collection development. The other thing that we also have is schools have processes in place in terms of like if there's a concern about a book. You know, never have we ever said that a parent can't choose for their individual student. You know, all parents reserve that right. But what we're seeing though is a few parents trying to push their requests and apply them to all. And that's why we push back because, you know, we never said that in the library that every book was for every reader. You know, libraries are spaces of voluntary inquiry. Nobody's ever forced to check out a book. You choose a book on your own. And one of the things that we know about readers is that they're pretty good about saying, I don't like this book, and they put it down. It doesn't matter if you're 8 or, you know, 0 or 99. You know, we know what we like, we know what we don't like. And as librarians, we respect the choices that readers have. And I think the last thing that I want to say too is that we keep hearing the word or the use of the word children when many, more often than not, the books that are of concern are books for young adult readers in high school settings. Mm. And we, again, through our processes in terms of like selecting books, want to make sure that we have information for all readers based on their need. And I think students should have that opportunity to be able to decide the information they want to choose and select. But as you've shared, you know, eat books around reproductive health or gender identity or sexual orientation, or even books about civil rights. I mean, my thing is that when you remove one book, it becomes easier to remove more. It's like you pulled one stone out of the dam. And so I think one of the things librarians want people to know is that libraries are spaces for all people.
And it's so important to note that according to various research, I cited that 2024 Knight Foundation survey that found 2/3 of Americans oppose efforts to restrict books in public schools, and 9 in 10 public school parents say they're confident in their local public schools selecting appropriate books for their students to read. And I think this needs to be repeated, because I find that in some news segments, they tend to show the parent that is the loudest and is the angriest. And it makes you think that this is widespread. But when you look at the research, that is not the case. So, Martha, what have you learned over the years about who is really behind all of these book bans? How should we think about how we got to a place when PEN America, in its report, I mean, it's so breathtaking when they write, "Never before in the life of any living American have so many books been systematically removed from school libraries across the country. Never before has access to so many stories been stolen from so many children." Given that you have been doing this work for so long, how do you describe and explain how we got to this point? I know it's a big question, but we have time.
Okay, I'll work on it. I knew immediately that something was fishy here. The big attack that happened to me was in September of 2021, making me one of the first school librarians in the country to be caught up in all of this. And prior to that time, September of 2021, there had been, from time to time, you know, a parent who would get in touch with a concern about a book. Now, I want to be very particular about the articles there. A parent concerned about a book. Mm-hmm. And that would lead to this ye old-fashioned thing called a conversation, where the parent could tell me what their concern was. I could hear that concern and then explain to the parent why that book was in the library collection, its literary merit, the awards it's won, the value it has in the collection as a whole. And in every one of those roughly half a dozen cases over the course of 20 or so years, the parent understood, did not demand that the book be removed from the library ultimately, and then we could work together to find an alternate title for their student. What happened in 2021, though, was we were seeing parents show up en masse at school libraries and to complain not about one book, but half a dozen, a dozen, hundreds at a time. So that it was apparent to me immediately that something was different here. And it took me approximately 24 hours to figure out that this was not an organic concern about a particular book or set of books, but an organized, coordinated effort. And the way that became clear to me was when I looked at the first two books that were challenged in September of 2021 in my library, which were Gender Queer by Maya Kobabe and Lawn Boy by Jonathan Evison. I thought that was a very unusual combination of books. One was a memoir in graphic novel format. The other was literary fiction that had been compared by the New York Times to Catcher in the Rye. And I just kind of started searching on that combination of books. And what I discovered was that 2 weeks prior to the challenge in my district, the same pair of books had been challenged in Texas, mm-hmm. using the same talking points. A week later, same pair of books was challenged in Fairfax, Virginia, using the same talking points. And then the next week, it showed up in New Jersey. And then in the weeks that followed, same pair of books. I watched it travel across the country, went to Ohio, I went to Colorado. So I knew that this was being organized. And when I dug a little deeper, I started to find websites like No Left Turn in Education and Moms for Liberty, and realized that there was a script, that there was a playbook, that there was a list that was being distributed among far right-wing networks, with the target being school libraries. Mm.
It's really incredible to think about how coordinated this has been. The American Library Association put out a study that found 72% of the demands to censor books in schools and public libraries came from organized movements, including pressure groups, especially Moms for Liberty. And it's so important to follow the money with pretty much anything in this country these days. And here's what we've been able to find. There's a couple articles out there, one from GLAAD. It found per filings obtained by the Associated Press, Moms for Liberty reported $2 million in revenue in 2022. They received a $25,000 grant from the Heritage Foundation in 2022, an anti-LGBTQ nonprofit that opposes marriage equality. They got a $100,000 grant from the George Jenkins Foundation, a conservative foundation that backs other anti-LGBTQ organizations. In 2023 June, Julie Fancelli made the first large donation to Moms for Liberty's PAC, $50,000. And then PBS also has a piece looking more at Heritage and some of the other money that they have received. In some cases, it's hard to follow the money, because they're 501c4s, so it's hard to find exact funding sources. But Moms for Liberty has the most information on that. So that's important to highlight. Becky, what would you like to add about what you have learned over the years about the coordinated effort behind all of this and how we got to this place?
So I'd like to add, you know, to Martha's point, we know that much of what's happening is a copycat sort of our activities, you know, that when we have the school board viewings and showings, because they're recorded here in Texas, the readings of piecemealing passages from or sentences from different parts of the book, rather than considering the book as a whole, to cause school board members to feel ashamed, you know, embarrassed and that sort of thing. I mean, we're definitely used in a very intentional way to paint a picture of what quote unquote children had access to. But what no one was saying is that if you read the book in its entirety, maybe there was it wasn't that inflammatory because there was context to the whole, with the whole story. It takes me back to thinking about the videos that you see during the McCarthy era when, you know, they were asking questions and Senator McCarthy was asking questions and the respondent said, you know, you've taken one passage to try and you don't have the full context of what's happening. And what we know in terms of legal precedents is that, you know, when we review a book through any kind of reconsideration process, we are supposed to read the book as a whole and consider the literary merit, if it has any sort of informational merit. And then part of the process, at least when we go through it and anywhere else in any school, we look at the credentials of the writer. We look at the research, if there's any research that's tied to the book that's written. So there's this perception that we just pick whatever's out there. We don't do that. I mean, funding is limited, and so we scrutinize purchases often. But again, the frame of that children, quote unquote, children are having access to young adult materials is clearly false.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we're joined by two librarians featured in the documentary, The Librarians, who've been leading the fight for the right to read. Martha Hixon recently retired after 20 years as a high school librarian in New Jersey. Her fight for the right to read has been recognized with many, many awards. She's faced attacks online from groups that oppose books, focusing mostly on LGBTQ plus content. Martha Hixon was one of the first school librarians who's been targeted by these organized attacks. Becky Calzada is a district library coordinator in Leander, Texas, and co-founding member of Texas Freedom Fighters, a grassroots-led group of librarians that support intellectual freedom and highlight the positive work of school librarians. Becky has also received awards for her incredible work fighting for the basic right to read. If you would like to talk about what libraries and librarians have meant to you, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a librarian or an educator and you have a story to share about the power of books and the power of knowledge, Or if you have a general comment about these book bans or a question, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. The Librarians will premiere on PBS on Monday, February 9th. You can find screenings, if you'd like to see the film in a movie theater, at thelibrariansfilm.com. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call's Authoritarian Playbook series. I'm Rose Aguilar. We will be hosting our next Authoritarian Playbook series live on Tuesday night from 6:30 to 7:30 at our event space, 220 Montgomery Street in San Francisco. And we are so happy we just confirmed John Powell, the director of the Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley. He's out with a new book, so this is going to be a really important conversation. We hope you can join us for this live show, The Authoritarian Playbook, next Tuesday night from 6:30 to 7:30 if you're in the area at our event space, 220 Montgomery Street in San Francisco, with John Powell, who is director of the Othering and Belonging Institute. Today, we are talking with two librarians who are featured in the new documentary, The Librarians, which will premiere on PBS on Monday, February 9th. We're joined by Martha Hickson, who recently retired after 20 years as a high school librarian in New Jersey. She is one of the first librarians who's been targeted by this coordinated attack. Becky Calzada is a district library coordinator in Leander, Texas, and co-founding member of Texas Freedom Fighters. Becky is co-author of Prepared Libraries, Empowered Teams, a workbook for navigating intellectual freedom challenges together. She has traveled across the country to meet with and work with school librarians. Becky, Texas plays a prominent role in the documentary, The Librarians, because Texas politicians have really been at the forefront of this fight to ban books, especially with Moms for Liberty. Can you give us an update? So much has been happening in Texas. Where is this fight today?
So it's definitely moved from the school library space into the public library space, and now the academic space. Back in 2021, 22, we were really doing a lot on the front lines for school libraries, but I do remember distinctly reaching out to several local public libraries that serve our area saying, are you ready? Because they say they're not going to come, they're not worried about public libraries, but this past year, there was legislation introduced to restrict access to materials in public library spaces, with the thought that children shouldn't be going into the young adult area, which they don't, but it was definitely going to have pivotal impacts, especially when we think about not all libraries having very large spaces, or our rural libraries that are very small. They essentially would need to have children in one room, or essentially librarians monitoring even who came into the public library space. In Texas, we've seen issues with academic freedom in terms of what can be taught and curriculum materials being reviewed. And so we're seeing that. And of course, right now we're not in a legislative session, but I would predict that there's probably going to be more about that to come. Again, thinking about censoring now just beyond books, but even in just curriculum and what's being taught.
What do you both think is the end game here? Why are these right-wing groups like the Heritage Foundation and others spending so much to fund groups like Moms for Liberty to go after these books? And I again, want to just acknowledge, I think a lot about the LGBTQ community when we do these shows, because unfortunately, a lot of the books that are being banned are LGBTQ books. The right is going after the LGBTQ community, and it's just brutal. I mean, to think that Republicans spent $215 million on TV ads attacking trans rights in the last election, I just think it's important to acknowledge that, because I think the media does a really bad job of just really talking about these attacks without acknowledging that we're talking about real people here, and there are consequences to these attacks. Martha, I'd love to hear what you think about that. And then what do you think about the end game here? Why are they putting so much time on going after these books?
Well, you know, if I go back to 2016 and that terrible march that happened in Virginia and the chant, you know, they will not replace us. Mm-hmm. I think the end game is that it's a cultural and social orthodoxy that centers the straight, white, Christian, and I might argue male experience. That is what they are afraid of, that the United States is becoming more diverse, more accepting, and they do not want to have that straight, white, Christian, a particular brand of Christian, I should say, experience sidelined in any way.
Martha, I appreciate you talking about that, because one thing I have noticed when reports come out about these book bans, they tend to take the safe route by saying politicians are doing this, city council members are doing this. And if we look at the facts, it's Republicans-backed book bans. It's Republican-funded groups or conservative. As far as I know, and I have asked groups about this, because if any Democrat is supporting these book bans, we should talk about it. But as far as I know, Democrats are not banning these books. Based on your knowledge, is that correct?
And that's consistent with my observations as well. You know, when I look at this from the hyper-local perspective, because this is a hyper-local action that taken collectively has national impacts, but these attacks are happening at the very local level. So I can tell you from my experience where it happened to me, the individuals involved were what I guess could be described as ultra MAGA. They were QAnon adherents who were election deniers, vaccine deniers. I'm not exaggerating when I say flat earthers. So it's a very extreme wing of what used to be the Republican Party.
You know, I still don't think many in the national legacy media know how to deal with this, because they don't want to be called partisan. They don't want to be called, you know, your liberal media. But these are just the facts. And if we don't talk about this, we're not going to figure out how to deal with it. So, Martha, what are your overall thoughts about media coverage of this? And I was really shocked that this didn't get more attention during the presidential election.
Yeah, I would say my immediate thoughts are too late and too little. I was suffering, truly suffering, in silence for pretty much the first year of my ordeal. Thankfully, I was able to get the attention of some local media, and it was critical to my being able to save myself and save the books. But I agree with you that the extreme point of view, you know, in the name of balanced coverage, gets a very prominent place in and platforming in the media coverage of this story. And what doesn't get unpacked enough, you cited some statistics earlier about the large majority of Americans who oppose book banning. And that is a nonpartisan view. People on both sides of the aisle say that book banning is un-American. It is not consistent with the view of democracy that our founding fathers had. And if you want to make America great again, if that's really your agenda, go back to what the founding fathers had in mind for our country. That is why they created a First Amendment that protects both expression and access to information. They wanted an informed electorate that would explore diverse perspectives and empower critical thinking in the country so that we could promote the creativity and the evolution of society. Those are the ideals of the founding fathers. Those are what Americans embrace. And that part needs to be unpacked and made plain. It is not a partisan issue to oppose book banning.
Martha, what do we need to know about what you call ultra MAGA? What a way to put it, about the QAnon people, the flat earthers. What do we need to know about them and what their end game is? And how big do you think they are?
It's a fringe. It truly is. Even in my school district, it's a fringe. But because they have this playbook and they have money, that they are able to, you know, make these attacks. And the interesting thing is, if when you watch the film, you'll see a very wonderful human being by the name of Reverend Jeffrey Dove in Florida. He came to the aid of our colleague Julie Miller down there. And he describes Moms for Liberty as genius, wicked genius. The wicked genius piece of this is that they started with school libraries. You know, they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars and this playbook behind them. And in a school library, we are generally the sole practitioner, one of us in an entire workplace. So they come after one person and they demonize one person and they continue and continue and continue for months. They are a small group, but they are very, very loud. And when they show up at your school board meeting unannounced, they are very, very scary. And my experience in the school ecosystem is that school administrators tend to be spineless in the face of loud people purporting to protect parents' rights, and they cave.
What was life like for you, Martha, before you started receiving support?
Terrifying. Truly terrifying. I was getting hate mail daily. I was shunned by my colleagues. My school administrators wouldn't even speak to me. I was threatened with arrest. They went to the police department to try to have me arrested. Mm-hmm. And when the police department went back, they went to the county prosecutor's office to have me arrested. My mental, physical health suffered to the point that I experienced a breakdown at work, had to be removed from the workplace. And when my husband took me to my doctor's office, the doctor I had known for 25 years, she didn't recognize me. Mm. And she knew immediately that I needed to be removed from the environment that was causing this breakdown. So she wrote me out of work for a month. And that turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because she prescribed me anxiety medication, connected me with a therapist. And in that month that I was away and I was starting to receive the therapy that I needed to recover, I was able to gain the strength to fight back. I had nothing to do all day while I was away from work. So that's when I started building the coalition of community supporters who eventually helped us emerge victorious.
Wow. How are you doing today?
You know, well, now that I'm retired, very well. Mm-hmm. But it really is, and I hate to, trivialize this in any way, but I really feel that those of us who have been affected by this, certainly those of us in the film, are suffering from, some form of PTSD. I was at a screening on Saturday. I did three screenings on Saturday here in New Jersey. And at this point, I've seen the film at least 20 times, so I don't normally view the entire film, but I come for the panel at the end. But at this particular screening, I arrived about halfway through and sat in for it, and the emotions started churning up again as if I was right back there. So when I least expect it, certain triggers will take me right back to the time and place where I was experiencing the most intense emotions.
Mm. Martha Hixon recently retired after 20 years as a high school librarian in New Jersey, and she is featured in the new documentary, The Librarians. It's going to premiere on PBS on Monday, February 9th. If you're in Northern California, it'll screen at the Rialto in Sebastopol tomorrow night at 6:30, the Rialto in Berkeley tomorrow night at 6, with a panel of Oakland School Library leaders. There will be more screenings in Berkeley and beyond. Find information at thelibrariansfilm.com. Becky Calzada is a district library coordinator in Leander, Texas, co-founding member of Texas Freedom Fighters, and that's Freedom, F-R-E-A-D-O-M. Becky's also featured in the film. Becky, what's your reaction when you hear about what Martha has gone through? I'm sure that you have met so many other librarians who have similar feelings and are still dealing with PTSD.
So it's hard, just as she shared, it's hard to watch when you see this movie all just concise and, you know, compact it together. When you see the harassment, the threats, the words, the ugly words that are shared, I mean, it's heart-wrenching, because what I know about every single librarian, whether in a school, public, or academic space, we come into this profession to serve our communities, to serve the people that come to into our libraries. And, you know, we're nonpartisan spaces. We have books for everyone. And when I think about the small minority that's coming and attacking, I mean, that is going to cause severe trauma in some cases. And in many cases, some librarians have had to leave, and we haven't even discussed the librarians that were fired, because that's a whole other level, because they're obviously looking to control. And so I have so much admiration for people like Martha and librarians like Martha, because I know that the reason they do what they do is because their ultimate goal is to protect access for all readers that come into our libraries.
Can you spend just a little bit of time talking about the librarians who've been fired?
So oftentimes librarians will stand up, and we've seen this a lot in public library spaces. You know, they have policies in place in terms of what they can and can't have. And so a library board is not happy with certain books that are picked. And in the case of Suzette, they didn't want any books around the civil rights, or I think about the works of like the 1619 Project and anything by Dr. Ibram X. Kendi. They asked her to remove those books, and when she wouldn't, she was fired for that. And so those definitely had any pornography in them, but yet that was the claim. And so we know that this isn't just about, these actions aren't just about censoring books around sexual themes or content, that this is more about controlling the access of information. And if you watch the movie, you see our narrator talking about, if you can control what comes into the library, that's everything. And I believe that that's the ultimate goal, is let's control what people have access to in our library spaces.
Can you elaborate on that a bit also, Becky? What do you think is their end game here?
So I think the end game in public schools is to control public education. I think about me, I am a product of public education. I know that my public school got me to where I am today, in terms of like knowing that I could graduate from high school, go to college. My parents could not help me. And we know that our public schools are places that, you know, equal opportunity, we're all learning the same things. And what we also know is that, sure, there's lots of private schools around, and those are wonderful too. But we know that in many private schools, they also can be gatekeepers in terms of who can access. And so when I think about the control of whether it's school libraries, funding for public schools, public libraries, and that sort of thing, to me, the end game, again, is to try to control what's in those spaces. And again, we've seen actions like we're firing library directors, or we're even just cutting off funding for libraries so that we can control what's coming into those library spaces.
In our remaining minutes, what can people do about this? What do you think is most effective? Becky, we have about a minute left.
So I always encourage people to get engaged. Go visit your public library spaces, school library spaces, if you can get in, because, you know, oftentimes you have to check in, but reach out to those librarians and tell them that you support them and that you want to know how you can support access to information, reaching out to school boards, public library boards, and saying you support intellectual freedom and you want them to follow their policies. They need to hear from people that support access, because right now what we know is that a small minority is controlling the removal of books.
Martha, what would you add about what people can do?
I concur with Becky. And another very important thing that people can do is use the library. Show up in that space. You'll be amazed at what you find there. It's much more than books. There's wonderful programs. One of the best things about my being retired now is I get to be a library patron and enjoy all the benefits of the library. But when it comes to defending the library, very often we librarians need to rely on those usage statistics. How many books are circulating? How many people are attending the programs? So if you have a library card, use it. If you don't yet have a library card, go get one. It's free and it's a passport to the world.
And Martha, what should we be looking out for, given that we have three more years under the Trump administration? What do you think is next for these groups?
Well, I think we're seeing what's next already. As Becky alluded to earlier in the conversation, when this all started, they said they were just concerned about school libraries. They just wanted books out of the school. They weren't going to touch anything else. Then it moved on to the public libraries. And in one case in Virginia, they even tried to stop bookstores from selling particular titles. We're already seeing the attacks at the university setting, but it continues to go. To go and grow. We've seen, Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert, that they're clamping down on them. The Smithsonian Institution now has to submit its planned exhibits to the administration, who will determine whether they're worthy or not, or delivering the right message. We just need to keep our eyes open and stay vigilant. The only thing we have to rely upon now as a roadmap, I guess, is history. And we know from the McCarthy era that it took 7 years to come out of that nightmare. If that is any idea of the time frame we're in, we're only about halfway through. Mm-hmm. So we just need to remain vigilant and continue to speak up and show up when we see these instances of censorship.
Martha Hixon recently retired after 20 years as a high school librarian in New Jersey. She was one of the first school librarians who was targeted by this organized attack. Becky Calzada is a district library coordinator in Leander, Texas, and co-founding member of Texas Freedom Fighters, FREADOM. Martha and Becky are both featured in the documentary The Librarians, which will premiere on PBS on Monday, February 9th. You can find screening information at thelibrariansfilm.com. Becky and Martha, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for your interest.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Calls Authoritarian Playbook Series.